Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Step Into the Light. On this show, we address such issues as abuse, addiction, debt, divorce, fear, guilt, heartbreak, illness, loneliness, loss of a loved one, and rejection. All of these circumstances cast shadows across the paths of our lives. Here you will hear stories and testimonies of people just like us who have found their way and helped others out of the gloom of those dark places. Once again, welcome to Step Into the Light. I am your host, Patty Sheen. Thanks for joining me for this 12th episode right here on Blog Talk Radio on the first day of December 2015. It is the nature of Blog Talk Radio for some listeners to come in and they are not able to stay with the entire show. Therefore, I would like to let you know where you can find us again. We are archived, so you can listen at your convenience. I have a website, and it is Patty Sheen. I'll spell that for you, PattiSheene.com. This show will be linked to the very first page when you get on the site, but if it's more than a week and you want to go back to this show, I have a Blog Talk Radio tab, and there are several pages below that tab. One of them is Step Into the Light Archive Shows. Go to that page, and you will find a link to all of the shows that we have broadcast. I have a Facebook page. It is entitled Step Into the Light. Just type that into your search bar. You will find me, and I would love to have you like me over there. Also, enjoy to have you follow me on Twitter, and I am again at Patty Sheen, PattiSheene. Well, can you believe this is the 1st of December? There's 24 days left until Christmas and only 30 days left in 2015. Where in the world does the time go? I've learned it's true that the older a person gets, the faster time flies. Well, this is my favorite time of the year. Where I live, the temperature's been dipping below freezing a couple of times, and we've seen a couple of inches of snow. I love the cooler winter weather, even though the ice on the roads that we experienced a couple of nights ago makes me nervous when I have to drive. But in my opinion, there's an excitement in the air that can't be duplicated when I look out the window and snow is falling. Thought I'd mention to our listeners that today is Giving Tuesday. If you have a favorite charity or one to which you already give regularly, you might consider adding a little extra at this time of the year. The need around the world is so overwhelming, and those of us who have more than we need should open our hearts to those who struggle to meet their basic needs. In fact, we'll offer that opportunity to do just that later on in the show. It's time to introduce our guest this morning. M.K. Henderson is the founder and director of BNI International, a nonprofit association that reaches out to assist people in third world countries. M.K. is also a professional motivational speaker and has been doing public speaking for over 25 years. The last 10 years, she has been speaking on hope, healing, and restoration. She is also the author of 7 books. Welcome to the show, M.K.
Thank you, Patty.
Such a pleasure to have you with us this morning, MK. And I wanted to commend you for all the work that you do in third world countries. Would you outline some of the deepest needs of the people who live in the countries that you have been to, MK?
Sure, yes. Many people living in third world countries barely have enough to fulfill their basic needs, like food, shelter. This is true especially for the children and the elderly. Many have no concept of a spiritual life, no idea what happens after death. Many people in third world countries, they just believe that life doesn't really have much value. And, you know, here in the West, it's hard for people to imagine that, there are people living in this kind of situation, you know. And then we also realize, because, for 10 years I worked in inner city, New York City, and realize that there are people living right here in the U.S. in the same situation, barely enough to really meet their basic needs of food and shelter. Sometimes it's a result of parents using food stamps improperly, or sometimes the food stamps they get are inadequate for the size of the family, job losses, different devastating things such as fires, where people lose their homes in fires and things like that. And so we're seeing these type of situations all over the world, including the U.S.
MK, I'm trying to imagine. My home is a fairly modest home. It certainly is not anything that would ever be in Better Homes and Gardens, but but I think about the fact that without even giving it a thought, I could get up at any time and grab a bottle of cold water out of the refrigerator, or if I'm cold, I can turn up the heat or whatever. I'm trying to imagine, what was the most difficult adjustments for you to make during your travels to countries with cultures and lifestyles and where basic needs are not being met? It's so different from what you have experienced. How did you handle all of those adjustments, MK?
Well, you know, the first thing that we think about is, you know, the lack of comforts, as you mentioned, such as hot water, you know, things that we take for granted normally.
Exactly.
Washing machines, you know, refrigerators, stoves, even indoor toilets that actually, you know, that flush.
Right.
Electricity, being able to have it any time of the day or in night. Internet accessible at any time, you know. These are comforts and perks that, you know, most people in third world countries do not have. And so those are the things that, you know, that we adjust to. You know, one of the things that I advise people, when you're going to travel to a third world country, just go with the flow, you know, because there's going to be many things that are uncomfortable. There are going to be many things that are new and different, and you just go with the flow. You realize, you know, I'm not in the West, so therefore everything is going to be different. And so you prepare in your mind that everything's going to be different. You prepare in your mind that there's going to be some discomfort. And you prepare in your mind that you're going to get through it. You're going to adjust. And you say, well, I'm just going to go with the flow. And, you know, when we have that kind of an attitude that we're just going to go with the flow, things do have a way of just working out. You actually have a way of being able to endure some of the different challenges, because you realize that you're there to really help people, and you're not there for your own comfort. You're not there for your own enjoyment, you know, although
yes,
there are great times of enjoyment and great times of fulfillment. But we have to be very sensitive also to the customs and the way of doing things. The meaning of things in the West and the East is very different. For example, if somebody in the West, you know, like say in the U.S., they went to a store and they bought an item and they returned it because it wasn't working properly, they'll just take the item back and say, this is not a good product, you know. But in the East, you don't do that. You say, wow, the store owner would be very insulted because you purchased it from his store. It was an item that belonged to him before you bought it, and he may have even made that item. So
wow,
you don't have the right to say it's not good. And usually you can't return it. You just have to buy another one and hope it works.
Goodness. Wow. And I just try to think about, I heard recently on a radio station where they were talking about some of these countries where, I mean, a mom, she goes to give her child a glass of water, and that glass of water is just almost black with sludge, and that's the water that they have available to them, and that's it.
Oh, yeah.
I think
it's very common. In African countries especially, you see the water is just black, you know, just like mud. And you know that water came from a river where people are bathing, animals are walking and trudging through the water, you know, that sort of thing. And it breaks your heart to see situations like that. I was in one country where there had been a major earthquake, and went to an area where people had not had food for almost 2 weeks, and they were drinking water from a river very far away where they had to walk a long distance, and the water, of course, was not any good. You know, it was really contaminated, and children were getting really sick. And so by the time we arrived, it was a desperate situation, and we just were so thankful that we were able to intervene in that case, because in that particular case, situations after disasters are very dangerous, and people are advised just forget about those people in the far remote places because no one can get to them. And after earthquakes, landslides are very, very prevalent. And because of that, people are risking their lives if they go to try to help someone who's perhaps on the verge of starving to death, or they haven't had really decent water that's not totally brown and contaminated for weeks. And so you're right. It's very, very dire situations that many, many, many people, millions of people live in these kind of conditions.
And I think about, you just mentioned the person without food for 2 weeks. And my goodness, I've had to have some medical testing done where I have to be without food for 24 hours. And I think, oh my goodness, how do people do this for days and days at a time where they absolutely have nothing to eat? And then when they do get something to eat, it's often food that's not very, either very palatable or very tasty. And it just amazes me how people can survive like that.
Well, I was amazed at how polite and how the people were willing to wait as we unloaded the food. And children, of course, were very excited. And yet, very well behaved. And I thought, wow, if this happened in the West, I wonder if people would be reacting in this manner, so calm.
Oh no, they would be greedy. They'd be the first one to get there.
You know,
which is sad.
And that people waited patiently for the distribution to take place. And you know, it was really amazing to see that. You know, it was amazing. We weren't sure how people would respond, you know, but it was just amazing. And I think because people live in such horrible situations, they become very passive. They're adjusted to not having, and they're used to not having. And even though they're in a dire situation, hopeless, and they felt like, what's going to happen to us, you know, no one cares, no one is coming. Yet at the same time, they didn't give up hope. You know, they had hope. They kept hope alive. And that was amazing to see.
Goodness. What are some, I'm sure there are just untold rewards of working in these countries, MK. Share some of that with us. And you have touched on that a bit in our discussion over the past few minutes, actually.
Yes. You know, like, it was amazing just to see the children excited, and you know, they were ecstatic, and the look on their faces, and the joy, you know, that someone cared about us, and someone risked, you know, the adults knew, whether the children knew or not, the adults knew that we had risked our lives to get that food there to them. And yes, working in these third world countries is very difficult and challenging at times. But, you know, the rewards are so great because you're making a difference and you're seeing lives changed, you know, in many, many different ways, economically, physically, because there are many health problems in these countries, educationally, because lack of education being available, and spiritually. You know, 1 year we began a feeding center for street children. They didn't have any place to bathe or shower or change their clothes. Food was very difficult to come by. And we were able to work with local people in a particular region and establish a little center. And children came there, and they were able to eat. They were able to drink hot beverages, get their wounds bandaged. You'd be amazed at how much trauma, emotional and physical, that street children go through. Ear infections, just like any child, but there's no one there to take care of that. And they could lose their hearing. But they were able to come and get these type of things taken care of, get a shower, get a change of clothing, and we give them some basic, very basic education, that sort of thing, just to help them to be able to get along. And it's amazing how just a little bit that you do goes a long, long way, you know. And with the street children, most of them are boys that we would see. We would see girls, too. Most boys and older boys tend to sniff glue in the streets, and we were able to see some of them really experience freedom from that habit. And some of them started going to church, making a better life. And some boys, young as 6 or 7 years old, out on the street because they simply could not eat at home. One little boy, father died, and every time there would be food prepared, excuse me, his older siblings would take the food, and they would eat it all. And so he would have to go to the streets to look for food. Mm-hmm. And one day, this little boy, he died at the hands of an older boy. He was only like 7 years old. He had been given $2 U.S. currency, that would be the value of it, to go and buy some food for himself by his mother. And it was a sad day because an older boy killed him for that $2.
Oh, my goodness,
so
MK. Oh, that's
there,
awful.
You know, like this little boy. And now we have been able to see 3 feeding centers developed. And the local people are running it themselves, you know, the ones who have a heart for these children. And so we just give the funds to keep the feeding programs going, to keep these programs going, to try to save lives of little boys like this little boy.
Oh, my goodness. Well, how easy or difficult is it for the people you work with to embrace and accept the message of hope that you carry to them? Because I'm thinking you come into these areas, you provide these needs, but does it take a while, MK, for them to develop a trust relationship with you where they know that today you're here, but tomorrow you're not going to abandon them?
You know, most of the people that we work with, they have such a vast arrangement of in terms of needs, economic needs, physical needs, you know, education and spiritual needs. And the people, usually they have hope. They have a hope. They believe that things are going to be better tomorrow. You know, they just have, I think it's part of the human spirit, you know, the indomitable human spirit.
Oh, yes,
we have
true.
To have a little bit of hope. Even if things look really bad, we've got to have some hope. And so when I show up, right away, I symbolize hope because they say, okay, she is coming to help us. And so they embrace me immediately. There is no hesitancy whatsoever because they know, okay, we have needs. Physical needs are the most important needs that they have right away, you know. Economic
sure.
needs are the most important needs that they have right away. Those are needs that are crucial and that are urgent. And they know, okay, she's here to help us with these two urgent needs more than anything else in terms of what they know that they need to be able to carry on. And they know if these two urgent needs are met, physical needs and spiritual and physical and economical needs, then they know that later down the road there might be a hope of somebody getting a little bit of education and things of that nature that are not considered as important. So the people really embrace me immediately. There's no hesitation on their part. They accept that message of hope and healing. Many people come and say, I need healing in my physical body. I need emotional healing. And they yearn for that. They are looking for something to believe in that works. They're looking for hope. You know, they say, we just believe that someday someone will come and help us.
And that is so wonderful, MK, that you're there to do that. And like I said at the beginning of the show, I cannot commend you enough for your dedication to these people who need you so desperately.
I'll give you an example. I see many times people will come to an area, and like you said, they'll be there for a day, and then they don't see them again. And I had a situation like that where there was a huge compound where we had women and children, almost 40 women and children in this compound. And the women had been severely, severely abused physically and sexually. And the children had also suffered quite a great level of abuse. And when I started to go and see these women, I was invited to go there, and I said, well, we don't know what we can do to help or what we can do to provide. But we realized they didn't have food, and the lady that was running the place, she was a local, and she said, they really don't have food. And we looked everywhere, and there was no food on the property at all. And so I said, well, you know what? We don't have a lot of money. We don't. They said, well, we just don't have anything coming in right now. But you know what we can do? We can get some food in here. And so the first thing we did was get food, you know, because it was an urgent need. And then I said to the lady, we don't have anything in our budget to be able to provide a certain level of financial support monthly for your situation here. But we'll just take it one day at a time, and we'll just try to see what we can do. Well, of course, we noticed there was a lot of property there, and we thought, well, there's a farming area. Maybe someone can grow crops. And we knew of a gentleman who had a children's home who needed some area. He needed some farming area. He wanted to start growing some vegetables. So we took him there, and we said, Does this work for you? And he said, yes, this will work. And I said, we'll pay the lease. We'll pay the lease to these women and children, and so they'll have a monthly income by whatever the lease is going to be, and you farm the area, and then you're able to take your produce to the market and sell it, and that will give you money for your children's home. Because, you know, the saying says that if you give a person a fish, that helps for a day or two, or you can teach them how to fish, and then they can go out and be able to fish and provide for themselves.
Right.
And that's always been my philosophy, because I grew up in an area where there was a very strong work ethic, and that's something that you just did. You worked. And so anyway, I realized this will be a great opportunity for both groups. And so a few weeks or months went by to making arrangements, and in the meantime, every week I would go to the facility and I would counsel the women and some of the children, mostly women. Now, these women had come from severe abuse situations, very severe abuse, sexual abuse and physical abuse, a lot of violence they had come out of for years, years of this kind of thing. And so I decided, since women do not have any desire to get up in the morning, they are very, very, very deeply depressed. They have nothing to live for. Some of them had been used in slavery, and they have no chance, zero chance of getting a mate for a husband, you know, a husband. Mm-hmm. And their chances of getting employment is very, very low because they have no skills, you know. And so I thought, I need to help these women get out of depression. I need to be able to provide some kind of hope for them. So I started meeting with them every week, and this went on for several months. And as I counseled them and allowed them to be able to express themselves and what they were feeling and the pain and the hurt and the frustration and the hopelessness of not having a future. And these are women in their 20s and some early 30s. And they felt like, I might as well die tomorrow. I have no future. Well, after several months, we were doing these sessions, and I noticed that they were experiencing emotional healing. And it was great to see that. And they would look forward to the day that I would come and spend with them. And one day they told me, people come just to look at us, you know, like we're animals in a cage. They just come to look to see what's going on. But they don't come back every week like you do. Mm-hmm. And I continued that for over a year, every week just going there and spending that day with them. And they would look forward to it. They'd be so excited. And so when we went back to seal the deal and put the contract for the lease, I was shocked, because the whole area had been plowed up. And I said to the lady who ran the place, who plowed this? Where did you get money to pay someone to come in and plow this area? And she said, no, we didn't. She said, the lady said, why should we lease the land to someone else to farm it? Why can't we farm it ourselves and grow our own crops and have our own business? I was flabbergasted.
Oh, now there's a success story.
These are women that didn't want to get up in the morning. They had nothing to live for. And now they plowed up this whole area, you know, with a little tiny shovel by hand, you know. And so I was a little embarrassed, because here is this other gentleman, and he's looking, and he has a plot left about 14 feet by 14 feet. He isn't going to be able to make any money off of that. And
oh,
so he looks
goodness.
At me and says, it's okay, it's okay. I said, this isn't enough for you, is it? And he said, no, but it's okay. He said, we'll find another plot of land elsewhere. Let the women continue to do. And, you know, it was so exciting because a few months later, as I would continue my weekly sessions with them, they were bringing me bags full of vegetables. And this is for you. Take this home, you know. And they were
oh,
so proud.
Oh, isn't that amazing?
Done. And it was so exciting. And then I started teaching them how to make jewelry and things like that. And so, you know, that's just an example of some of the things that we can do when we don't have a lot of money, but we do what we can with what we have. And it makes a difference. A little bit can go a long, long ways. Just amazing, you know.
Well, it sounds like what you do is absolutely marvelous, MK. Oh, my goodness.
And we know that the women not only experienced emotional, physical, but also spiritual healing. And because their lives were totally, completely changed around. And,
sure.
You know, it's amazing to see what can happen.
We're going to take a really short break here. This is a time when it's the nature of Blog Talk Radio for people to kind of come in and out. So for those who are just joining us, I want to make you aware that you are listening to Step Into the Light with Patty Sheen. Our guest today is M.K. Henderson. M.K. is the founder of BNI International, which is a nonprofit association. She reaches out to people in third world countries, and she has been telling us some amazing things about how people's lives are changed in these countries. I also want to make people aware one more time of where they can find me. I can be found at Patty Sheen, PattiSheene.com. All of the information you need about the show is there, as well as some other things on the site, but I'd love to have you come by and visit. And MK has a website as well that is not quite ready yet. MK, do you want to share with us where folks can find you?
Yes.
Where we'll be able to find you.
Yes. It's a brand new one, and it's called HopeHealRestore.com. And after hope is a hyphen, and after heal is a hyphen. That's H-O-P-E hyphen, H-E-A-L hyphen, R-E-S-T-O-R-E.com.
Excellent. Okay, and for our listeners, if you don't remember that, which people often don't, and you probably don't have pen and paper handy, go to that website I gave you, my website, which is pattysheen.com, and under the Blog Talk Radio tab, you will find a page entitled Website and Social Media Information, and that will have MK's website, and I have the websites and social media information for all of our guests that we've had on the show, so be sure to stop by there and visit if you'd like to look MK up and visit her website. MK, when did you begin a writing career?
Oh, it was in the early 1990s, right after I graduated from college.
And what led you to do that? Were you already working in other countries by then or no?
I had only been to Mexico
okay.
at that time. I had just graduated from college, and I was living in a large U.S. city, and we would travel every week to a juvenile detention center to reach out to children and give them hope. And I was surprised at the number of children that were there who had not committed crimes, but they were there because they didn't have parental care. And the police said there was no place else to take them. So they ended up in the juvenile detention center, some of them as young as 8 years old. And we would go there and we would give them the message of hope. And these young people grasped it very quickly. And we started to see some results as their lives were starting to change. And we wanted to follow up with them, but we weren't allowed to do that because of the government regulations. So we developed a series of booklets, and they were just called Inner City Survival Guides. And we had reformed inmates help us with writing and the subject matter and addressing issues that's important to the young people that were in detention. And so our first writing series, our first writing project was birthed out of that need. And they were just called Inner City Survival Guides. It was a three-part series friends, lovers, and others, doing time because we wrote it for those kids that were in detention, and making a comeback. And that was the real, real important one because we didn't want them to end up back in detention. We want them to see their lives restored and back on track. Because recidivism is very high. You know, the recidivism rate for youth is very, very high. And some of these children were very young, 8, 10, 12, 13 years old. So that's how we started. That's how I started writing. It was out of that need to give them something.
If I can just inject here, MK, you and I have a little bit of a common history there because I worked with I worked in a residential child psychiatric residential child care facility out here in my area for a few years. So I know just what you mean. Our kids were ages 9 to 20, I believe. And yeah, some of their histories are just amazing, and some of them do come to the facility with very little hope, mainly because they have been so abused and they have been so downtrodden, and they came from the major cities and were so involved and entangled in the gang activity and the drugs that they just didn't see a way out. And yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about to a degree. Like I say, I'm kind of a cousin to it. To what you did, but I can certainly identify with what you're talking about there.
Yeah, I can imagine that where you worked, it was very challenging.
Yeah, I loved it. I loved it. Our facility unfortunately closed eventually, but we had children from several different states, and when they came to where we are, we're down here in southeastern Colorado, and there's like nothing around. You know, like the closest Walmart is 25 miles away. So when these kids got here, they were just flabbergasted because most of them were used to being in big cities and they just felt totally lost out here on the prairie. What are the topics of some of your other books, MK?
Okay, well, I have a book called Lifeline for Singles, and it helps young adults make that transition from being a teenager to a college student. You know, life of independence and dependence, you know, where they're going from being dependent to independent and preparing for college.
Yeah.
And then the next book after that I wrote is called Sizzlers. And it's Sizzlers for Singles. And that is a devotional book. And it has a lot of inspirational nuggets of wisdom and encouragement for one's daily life. 52 devotionals for 52 weeks out of the year. And so they spend a week on each topic. And there's a lot of different, lot of information that they can just kind of focus on, and that way it takes away the pressure of having to do a devotional every single day. If you miss a day, you don't have to worry because you're still on that same week. And so those books are written for young adults, and then the Sizzlers book is actually for people of all ages, and it's catered towards singles. But I've had some married couples say they enjoyed both books, and they found a lot in both books that applied to their marriages.
Oh, well, very good. Well, MK, it's the nature of our show, as I mentioned at the opening, to talk about, have our guests talk about a dark time in their lives or ways that they have helped other people out of dark times, and you have certainly done that. But can you share a dark time in your life when you felt that maybe a particular goal would never be met, or you felt you were headed down the wrong path, or you were just generally discouraged?
Sure, and I talk about this in my book, Lifeline for Singles. I had just completed my master's degree, and I had come down with chronic fatigue syndrome. And it may have been from the late nights of studying and the projects and not eating well, but it was devastating. Because when one has chronic fatigue, they're chronically tired and exhausted and depressed from not having energy.
Oh, yeah.
And I was working a very high-pressure job in New York City. I had little rest. I would try to force myself to get proper sleep, and then there was insomnia. And nothing seemed to work. And this went on for 3 years of suffering. A natural medicine doctor helped me gradually regain my energy, and I focused on my faith in God. I focused on helping other people. I tried to turn my mind away from focusing on my problems. I was in a job that was very high-pressured, a job that was very stressful. And during that time, I ended up leaving the job and starting a public relations firm in Midtown Manhattan, and used this firm a lot of times to bring social issues to the media's attention. That time, women and children were living in welfare hotels in a lot of major cities. And we would take these women and get them breakfast and assist them in getting back on their feet. And we also took up the cause of veterans. One of my clients established a shelter for homeless veterans to assist them in acquiring jobs and helping them to get back on their feet. And I also brought that issue to the media attention through the national talk shows. And so I was able to use my situation and try to learn from that and be sensitive to other people's plight and their situations and their challenges. I think one of the things that really helped me was Jeremiah 29:11 says, and this is in the Bible, it says, I know the plans that I have for you.
Yes, that's a favorite of many.
Hope. Mm-hmm. And I think God's saying that to many of us today. He has a future and a hope for us, and we can't give up until we see that plan fulfilled. And then it's not just individuals, but it's also changing different parts of society. Like I said, we use a lot of these issues, like the veterans issue, the homeless issue of women and children in the U.S., and we had to bring that to the media's attention in order to see some things in society change. And during that time period, we were able to see those places close down, those welfare hotels close down. We were able to see the women put in skills training and be able to actually become employees and have their own apartments. And so we know that this message of hope, healing and restoration, that it works because we've seen people's lives totally change. It takes a great deal of effort sometimes, but it pays off, you know. In one third world country, I developed a training manual called Healing and Restoring Children at Risk. And we developed it for a nonprofit overseas. And they use that manual to train all the counselors in children's homes, because in third world countries, there are lots of children's homes, hundreds of children's homes. And I found out that many of these homes are being operated as merely businesses, and the welfare of the children is not a priority. And so I was invited to come in and train children's home directors. Well, they may have thought I was coming in to train them how to get more money. Who knows? Because they couldn't bring any other staff to the conferences. And I would question them, well, where's your staff? And, oh, no, it's okay. And so I realized, well, these people are coming, and they're not really too interested in, you know, things such as the counseling children and the health of children and the emotional recovery of children that have been traumatized. And so I developed a training manual so that they would be able, the children's home directors would be able to take these training manuals back to their homes, back to their staff, and shared the training manuals with their staff who were dealing with these children on a day-to-day basis, and give the staff a tool to work with that would help them, because the staff were just, they were just, some of them just hanging on by a thread, you know, and you can relate because of the type of facility that you worked in. And
yes.
It was a great help to them to be able to have a resource. And then I had a couple of people from the West say, well, I think we want to have that resource in English. Can you adapt it to the American culture? Because we came to your conferences where you were teaching these people how to work with the children that were traumatized. We really need that in the U.S. also. So then we came up with a U.S. version, a Western version, that will help the caregivers, especially people who have foster children, help them to be able to take care of these special needs children. Some of these children are difficult children. And so I was amazed that so many people wanted this book. It was in demand, because I realized later there's a lot of people trying to take care of special needs children and are frustrated. They don't know what to do.
Sure.
And many of these children act out, you know, their behavior is so bad because of fear. And because of needing attention, they have a fear that they will be abandoned again, a fear they'll be rejected again. And then others are just acting to test out the adults who are caring for them to see if they really love them, if they're really committed to them. And I am an adopted mom of one child, and many of the issues that were raised in this book, in this training manual, and methods of dealing with children, well, they've already been tried and tested by myself. Because adoptive children have special needs, and many have suffered rejection, and some of them feel rejected, even if their families did not reject them. And
right.
Many feel abandoned. And, of course, the children in the street and the children in the children's homes in these third world countries feel very alone. And there's no one to care for them that's even related to them. And many of them don't know or haven't seen any relatives since parents have died or someone has just moved on, you know. And this whole message of hope and healing and restoration, it also applies to nations in turmoil. And so I wrote a book called Peace and Reconciliation. This is bringing hope and healing to nations. And the U.S. is a good example of that. You know, there's a lot of violence on our streets. And what's happening these days kind of takes us back to the days of the 1960s when Martin Luther King
was preaching
his message of love. And the nation was divided at that time. And many third world countries are also on the verge of civil war right now. We know that. We see that in the news. And throughout history, there's always been one person or one group, sometimes the least unlikely person, who brought peace in an erupting situation, whether it was in the Philippines or South America or India. It seemed like God was looking down and just chose to put his finger on one person and pointed out that person was going to be the one that was going to bring peace to a situation.
Well, you brought up some very good points here, MK, because in our country we are just suffering so much violence right now, and I don't know what the answer is, but it's really sad for a country that is supposed to be as developed as we are. And it sounds like your book would be something that would be very much worth checking into. MK, you've been speaking for a number of years, and you talked about your message of hope and healing and restoration, and it sounds like you talk nationally and internationally both. Is that correct?
Yes, I do, and we do. We're starting something new called Hope and Healing Conferences, and every summer when I'm not traveling abroad, we want to bring hope, healing, and restoration to people in the USA, you know, in the U.S.,
Mm-hmm.
And so that is the goal of the Hope and Healing Conferences. The first half of the conference is more of a general assembly, the keynote speaker, usually myself. And then in the afternoon, we have small groups. People share their trials, their hurts, their pains. And we usually try to have a professional counselor or a pastoral counselor or psychiatrist that facilitates these small groups. And so that's something that's brand new. And if you're interested in the Hope Healing Conference, you go onto that website in a few days. It should be finalized and up. And that is Hope Heal Restore with the hyphen Hope hyphen Heal hyphen Restore .com. And there is a contact link. You click on the contact, and it says Book MK for Hope and Healing Conference, and you fill out the form. You tell us the information, the size of your group. If you think it's going to be a large group or a small group, and then we will call you and we will work with you to try to bring it to pass. And we believe it will bring a huge difference in the lives of many people.
And how small of a group would you be willing to meet with, MK? I mean, if you had a group of only, say, 10 people, would that be something that you could go ahead and follow through with, or is that a little bit too few? Do you have to have a minimum, is my question,
We can start with a group as small as 10, and what we would do is we would work with that group, and we would help them to, they would be like a steering committee, and we would help them to facilitate a larger conference. Some of the 10 people may be involved in associations or organizations or churches. They may be involved in something, you know, the YMCA even, you know. They may be involved in these things, and they can go to their colleagues that they are working with or that they are associated with and bring more people and get more people involved, and then develop a Hope and Healing Conference based out of that small group of 10 people. We can do that.
I see. And is excuse me, is there a fee, travel expense reimbursement, things of that nature that, that a group would need to consider?
Well, what we'll do is we will pretty much kind of, everything is based on the size, the type of conference is based on the size of the group. If it's a small group, if you have a conference of 50 people, then, of course, the expenses are going to have to be a lot lower. If you have a conference of 1,000 ladies, 1,000 women and men, then, of course, the expenses are going to be higher. So it's just going to depend on that size of the group. So when you email, when you go on the website and you connect with us, you tell us about your group and what your goals are, what you'd like to see accomplished. And then, of course, if you already have a group, maybe your organization has a group and your organization does a conference, we can work with that already existing group as well. It can be maybe an association that's working with domestic violence, maybe women in domestic violence, for example. And that association, maybe they'd have an annual conference. They said, well, we don't want to start from scratch. We have our own annual conference. Well, then they would just invite me to come in and be the facilitator or do the keynote for that particular conference that they already have. So we work in many different arenas, and we're able to be flexible enough to adjust to what the need and the situation is.
Very good. Well, MK, tell us also about the Salt for Souls seminars. I love that title, Salt for Souls seminars.
Yes, we started these just in the past year. And, you know, salt is a healing substance. And the idea came to us because there is something called Himalayan mountain salt, and it's very healing. I ended up using it one time for a real severely sprained ankle, and within 3 days, my ankle was healed. And I thought, you know, this applies to the human life, to people's lives. They need healing. Many times we need healing. And what can be applied? Something like a healing balm, something like salt. And so we decided we'll have these seminars, and we want to save people's lives. These seminars started out kind of just helping people deal with some of their issues and things like that. And then it developed into where the people who are being healed, the people who are being restored emotionally, spiritually, physically, they want to reach out and help others. And part of the healing process is reaching out and helping others. And so we picked up a project called Girls and Grams, Girls and Grandmas. And in this particular project, we focused on earthquake victims in the Himalayan Mountains, because there are many girls there who are abandoned, and they're left on the streets for people that can just come by and use them for whatever. And
exploit them.
Many elderly women also, whenever there is a disaster, like an earthquake or a hurricane, tornadoes, many times in third world countries, the girls are the first ones that are dumped, and the older ladies are the first ones that are dumped. And many people took their grandmothers, their mothers and grandmothers, and just dumped them out on the streets and left them to beg. And they took what monies they had and went to the West and have no intention of returning. Mm-hmm. And so these elderly women are just left on the streets to beg. And, of course, girls are just abandoned. It's very difficult for girls on the street.
And abused, and yeah, sure.
And these women that are 55 years old and up are just begging until they die from unnatural causes or, you know, starve to death. But we are building a temporary safe house for girls and grandmothers. And we want to also build a permanent home and a school, because in these third world countries, educating girls is very, very low on the list of priorities. And it's not like in the U.S. where people go to elementary and junior high and high school and they don't have to pay money to the school to go. Well, in third world countries, you pay to go to elementary school and junior high and high school. And if your family doesn't have money to pay for you to attend the school, then you just don't get an education.
Wow.
And so one of our long-term goals is to build a permanent home and school for girls and to be able to educate them, because most of the illiteracy is among women and girls. And so this project, Salt for Sews, is also used as a fundraiser. We bring a lot of videos and photos and show people what's actually happening, things that we're talking about, and then we ask people to give back. And as they reach out and as they give to others, many times, because the focus is not on ourselves, then we also experience healing. And so we started the construction on this two-story house, one floor for girls and one floor for grandmas. And they're going to be gaining new families that way, because they have someone to love and someone to love them back. And then we're going to have the grandmas doing some micro-business projects so they can have a little spending money and also help with their upkeep. And it's only $50 a month, you know, to sponsor a girl. And the reason that it's a little higher than some is because in this particular region, the government says if a girl is taken off the street and put in a home, then they are required. Whoever took them off the street by law is required to educate them.
Wow.
And so by having to pay for their upkeep and their education comes to $50 a month. It's actually a little more, but we don't want to have the sponsors pay more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why we are doing this project on Salt for Sews, because it's like we're saying, you're getting help, you're getting healing, and we want you to reach out to others. And as you do that and focus outwardly, your healing will come a lot faster and in a very speedy way. And that's a principle that's very, very true and works every time.
And
of course,
I'm glad
people that sponsor... I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, MK. I'm glad you brought that up, because with just a few minutes to go, we had talked about a way that folks could donate to your organization, and I believe at this point you wanted to do that through me. Is that correct?
Yes, we can do that. Uh-huh, that's fine.
Okay.
Because the listeners are familiar with you, and that's perfectly fine.
Okay. Okay, well, what I would recommend to any listener who would like to donate to MK's organization is for them to email me, I guess, at Patty, P-A-T-T-I, dot Sheen. There's a dot in there, dot Sheen, S-H-E-N-E.com. You can also find that email on my website, and then I would gladly send you back my mailing address. I think that's probably the best way to do it. So, yes, I'm glad you mentioned donations, because I had meant to bring that up, and our time is dwindling away rapidly, and I thought, oh, gee, I don't want to not mention that MK and her association definitely welcomes donations. So, especially in light of the fact that today is Giving Tuesday, folks. So, hey, that just fits right in. I'm sorry I interrupted you, MK, but I did want to get that
fine.
Very important factor in there. So,
and also, I wanted to mention, we have on the site, when that is back up and everything, when it's up and published, we are giving away every week a diamond nugget, and a diamond nugget is an encouraging word, and you can go on that site and subscribe to it. You know, subscribe to a diamond nugget. There's a little box that says subscribe to diamond nuggets, and you'll be able to get in your inbox once a week a nice little encouraging word.
That is neat. I love that concept. And I will definitely subscribe, because I can always use an encouraging word.
I think we all can.
Yes, absolutely. And I love to be an encourager, so I will pass that word on as well. MK, your talk today has been absolutely amazing. I just love to hear the ways that you reach out to people who are in such desperate need, and it's obvious that you do it with so much love and so much compassion in your heart. And I want to thank you so very much for sharing with us. You shared your passion for this work, and I would encourage our listeners to look up MK's books, go to her website when it becomes available, and as I said earlier, go to my website, which is pattysheen.com, P-A-T-T-I-S-H-E-N-E.com, and you will find MK's information under the Blog Talk Radio tab on that website and social media page, and I will also put my email address there as well in plain sight, so that if a person would like to donate, they are welcome to do that. So, MK, once again, I want to thank you so very, very much. This has been just a delightful visit this morning.
Well, thank you so much for having me on your program today. It's been an honor.
And I want to wish you the very best with your work. And when will you be going back overseas again, do you know?
I don't know yet. But we're anxious to continue to follow up and see how our building project is coming along.
Oh, I'll bet. And when you go, do you go for about how long of a period of time? What is the duration of your trips?
It depends on the country that we're going to. Some countries we go to for like a week or 10 days. Some countries we go to for 9, 10, 12 months.
It just depends on the country
and depends on the project.
Wow. Have you been keeping count? I'm curious of how many trips you've made out of this country.
No, I haven't, but it's probably been at least, I don't know. I'd have to stop and think about that one. I'd have to stop and think because I've been doing this since the 1980s, since the late 80s, early 90s. So because I know one of the first trips was to South Africa, and probably I would say around that time, it's been quite a few years. So it could be the numbers could be pretty high. It's possible maybe 30, 40 trips. And then, of course, we have had some trips also to Israel, 20 different countries, actually. So
we know at least
40, maybe even up to 50
trips.
And so it just depends, right, it just kind of depends on what's happening at the time. We like to be in places where there are crisis situations because that's where people are needing hope, healing, and restoration.
Sure. Well, I have made it over the border to Mexico once, and I've made it over the border to Canada once, and that is the extent of my international travel. We even have our son and daughter-in-law live over in the UK, and we haven't even gotten there yet, so
well,
don't know if we ever will.
That's a great start.
Yeah.
The first time I went out of I think the first time I traveled abroad was to Mexico, and lived there for a while actually, and it was a real challenging situation, but it was a wonderful time also.
Well, I went as a tourist to Tijuana. I visited my aunt and uncle and my cousins out in California. They lived in the San Diego area. And, of course, that was one of our side trips while I was there, was to go to Mexico. And it's been a long, long time. It was a lot of fun. All righty, MK, once again, I want to say thank you ever so much for a wonderful show. And may you have much success with all your projects overseas, and you take care of yourself now. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you very much, Patty.
Goodbye.
Bye.
God bless you as well. Goodbye. Okay. Next week, we have a lady by the name of Gail Kittleson. She is the author of a memoir entitled Catching Up with Daylight. She recently released her debut novel entitled In This Together. Gail has encountered many interesting experiences throughout her writing journey, and she will share them with us. In closing, when you look back on the dark periods in your life, you may find they were not quite as dark as they seemed at the time. And when the light does shine again, it is so much brighter than you remembered. Hope to see you back with us again next week. That'll be Tuesday morning at 8 a.m. Mountain Standard Time. And also, don't forget, if you miss part of this show, you can go to my website at pattysheen, pattysheene.com, and go to the archive tab, and you'll find all of our shows. Also, MK's website. She hopes to have it up in just a few days, so check that out. It is hope-heal-restoration.com. Good grief. I will have that up on my website as well. Hope to see you here next week. God bless you.